Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. This is another one of those one for me's, and usually one for me's involves putting my friends in the spotlight. In this case, it is the effervescent, the world's most interesting man, Terrence Watson, and creative extraordinaire, Billy Burke. You guys are on the podcast today to talk about a little movie that you guys have put on Amazon Prime, but more importantly, the world, and that is Meal Ticket. But before we go any further, gentlemen, how are we today?
Doing great. How you feeling, Terrence?
I'm feeling happy. Like I should get a happy meal. You know what I mean?
Hey,
with a kid's toy.
So, as a precursor to a previous episode we did, Terrence continues to showcase why he is one of the finest New York City point guards in terms of the connection and the segues that he is, because the movie is, of course, Meal Ticket, and that is about essentially a cultural history at the McDonald's All-American game. And so what we're going to do today is one of our most recurring segments is, of course, rocking and copping, but we figured let's throw a twist in honor of our guests here. So, gentlemen, what are you rocking when you go to McDonald's for your order? Or more importantly, what sneakers? Either or.
Do you want to lead or you want me to lead?
I'll answer first. My quintessential McDonald's order is a 10-piece nugget with fries. You know what I mean? And the Sprite that you can't drink because it's like, you know, super sharp.
That's truly the embodiment of crisp. That's my favorite adjective to describe soda. And yeah, that McDonald's Sprite, much like a Black Air Force One, just hits a little bit differently when you take it upside your mouth. Billy, how about yourself?
Well, so yesterday, in celebration of the release of the film, my sister, my wife and I, my brother-in-law took my three nieces, my sister's three girls, to McDonald's to buy, to get them Happy Meals. And we did it because McDonald's right now has this McDonald's All-American Game Happy Meal that they have out. And it was cool because the girls felt like it was in relation to the release of the film. I mean, even though it's sort of, but it's not a meal ticket Happy Meal. It's focused on the McDonald's All-American Game. So I guess that's what I'm rocking and copping right now, or vice versa.
Perfect. Hey, man, there's no right or wrong answer as it comes to rocking and copping. It's just we hope we get to see the joy permeate through the screen, and I think we are. So let's, without getting any further and bearing the lead, we are talking, of course, about Meal Ticket on Amazon Prime right now. And this was one that, Terrence, I know you feel very passionate about the culture. This is kind of eerily reminiscent of the sports docs, rather, that we grew up in the 90s. And one of those moments for me was the fact that the opening scenes of the movie take place in Chicago. And why I mentioned Chicago is that was the backdrop of another essential sports documentary, which was Hoop Dreams. So was that intentional? And rather, let's just talk about sports docs that you guys both liked growing up. And did that have any hand in shaping the story that we're presenting via Meal Ticket?
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, we weren't in Chicago because of an inspiration from Hoop Dreams. Like, we were in Chicago because the 2022 McDonald's game was being held there. But that being said, like, the way that we shot it, and the directors, Corey and Carlton, you know, who did a masterful job on it and sort of had the vision for it, was to sort of capture the verite of the 2022 game in this sort of Hoop Dreams-esque kind of way, and just let it play out in its rawest, most, you know, organic and natural form. And then, yeah, I mean, look, like, Hoop Dreams is a classic of all classics. Like, you know, for me personally, that's the holy grail of, you know, the gold standard of documentary filmmaking. Was without a doubt one of the most prolific documentaries that I saw as a kid growing up.
Yeah, just to add to that, I mean, like Billy said, like, it just happened to be in Chicago, but I think, like, the connection for me is probably one of my favorites, which is Through the Fire. And the reason I say that is because, like, our characters, right? Like, you could tell, like, for some of them, for a lot of them, right? Like, this feels like the moment where, one, becoming a pro could be real, but two, you feel the gravity of, like, everything they're working for out of this moment, right? Like, this feels like the first piece of, like, you know, they're finally seeing me. I mean, you know what I mean? Flauge basically says that, right? Like, they're finally seeing me. And I feel like everybody feels that way, you know, once they're coming into this moment and connecting that dot back to, like, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Jay says on Reasonable Doubt, it's like something of a desperation, right? Like, these kids are fighting to change their lives, the trajectory of their families' lives. And this game is like that first symbol of, like, yo, like, it's happening. The work that I'm putting in is being recognized. And
it's tangible, right? And that's something Billy and I were chatting about in the pregame, so to speak, about the fact that this almost feels like step one of an ascendancy. And the analogy we were chatting about is, like, Terrence, you're a comedy nerd, like, you are a nerd about all the great things that we share in common. But if you are looking at it from the perspective of a Saturday Night Live cast member or comedian, right? Like, there are those years you spend at the Groundlings or being a member of the Harvard Lampoon. And it's just a stamp on your passport to superstardom. And every single one of them has that aha moment where it feels tangible. And it's really something that's genuine in an era where I think at times we feel like we have to play up to the cameras, and you can truly see the joy in it. And if for some reason this is the last step in their professional journey, that's still a mountain that they've climbed because of the fact that it's so internationally and almost globally well known. So kudos for you guys for capturing that moment. And it was one of those things that, as we kind of watched the documentary, they're all recalling, and they, in this case, being the players, about that moment when they first heard that they were invited to the game. So I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about how was that process bringing this from inception of an idea to the medium or small screen? Like, were you guys also kind of having those moments of doubt or apprehension around, like, are we going to get this done? And then where were you when you guys finally got the green light?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Well, I mean, to sort of back, you know, to back it up, like, where, you know, where I was when we got the green light. So I was actually in the post house where we were editing New York City Point Gods. So I was a producer on New York City Point Gods. And it was sort of the tail end, you know, of the edit as we were sort of finishing the film. And Chike Oza from, you know, the directing duo Cootie and Chike, who were executive producers on New York City Point Gods, which Terrence also, you know, worked on and was a writer, was directed by Sam Iliad, executive produced by Rich Kleiman and Kevin Durant, along with Cootie and Chike. But Chike had called me up while I was working on NYC Point Gods, and he was like, yo, you ready for your next doc? And I was like, what do you got? And he was like, the McDonald's All-American game. And I was like, no way. Like, it just felt so big immediately. And, you know, coming off of New York City Point Gods, like, or finishing that up as a kid who, you know, grew up idolizing many of the guards in that film, like, it felt like this, like, you know, this manifestation of my, you know, professional destiny in a way to be able to, you know, participate in the making of that film. But then also that same, like, sixth grade kid who was dreaming of being a McDonald's All-American to then have that be like the follow-up. It was like, it just felt, you know, ordained. So that's where I was. And, you know, it wasn't that easy. You know, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to make a film about the McDonald's All-American game. And then it just happened. Like, there were a lot of stakeholders involved, you know, a company known, a guy, you know, by the name of, you know, Ross Martin. He initially had the idea to do the McDonald's All-American game film, and he approached McDonald's about it. He had a relationship with the CMO over there, Tarek, and he got McDonald's to buy in. Cootie and Chike had identified Corey and Carlton, who, you know, Carlton Sabs and Corey Colvin, to direct the films, you know, first-time directors. They were, at the time, just rapping Genius. And, you know, what is really important to Cootie and Chike is giving first-time filmmakers an opportunity to sort of, you know, make a film. He, you know, they did that with Point Gods with Sam Iliad. He was a first time filmmaker that they helped usher into that. They mentored the filmmaker Edward Buckles on his film Katrina Babies over at HBO. And then they did this with Corey and Carlton. So bringing Corey and Carlton on board as directors, then we had to cut a pitch tape and we had to go out and shop it and see who'd be interested in it. And, you know, there were some, you know, some folks that, you know, just felt like maybe it didn't fit into their programming. And we ultimately, you know, got to Amazon fairly quickly. And, you know, Noah over at Amazon was like, he saw it right away. And he was like, you know, I want to do this. And that's how we, you know, we got started. And I can't leave out Roc Nation also was, it was Creative Control, Roc Nation, and Known, who were all partners on the film from a production house point of view. And then Lori York at Roc Nation, who's the head of television and film over there, really helped sell it through to Amazon. She had the relationship there and she did an incredible job of getting it across the finish line.
My portion of the story 100% intertwines with like everything Billy said in the beginning. I'm not even sure if Billy knows this, but I actually got the call for Meal Ticket the day before I got the call for Point Gods. I don't know if we've ever discussed that, but so what happened was, just a little bit of backstory. I think around like, when was Zach LaVine's first All-Star game, like dunk contest? What was that, 2013?
I think so. Or was that the one against Aaron Gordon?
The first one okay. When he just took over. It was like around 20, let's call it 2012.
Let's say 14, and this is what post-edits right, are yeah, for. Yeah. But so, keep going, T.
I'm just giving that as context because Corey was like, he was shooting that. I think he was like the DP or something. And we were doing it for Revolt TV, and like, yeah. Corey has told me the story where he was like, he didn't know who this kid was. Why are we shooting this kid? Why are we following him? And then all of a sudden, Zach LaVine happens, right? Like at All-Star, you know, Saturday night. And he remembered, like, I was, the producer on that and like the writer, and it was my concept. But again, he was like, who is this kid from? Like, where is he from? From Washington? Like, why are we shooting him? And then like, it must have stuck with him that like, I knew ball, you know what I mean? So like fast forward, like well over 10 years later, you know, or maybe like a little bit before, like less than 10 years. But what the point is, I'm in Mexico City. I'm shooting something. I'm working on a project with Gatorade and I get a call. I'm in a cab. I get a call from a number I don't know. And I'm like, hello. And it's Corey. And he was just like, yo, like, you know, I don't know if you remember me. I got your number from a call sheet. He starts back, like, explaining, like, oh, like, you know, but that moment stuck with me. And it just was like, yo, this guy really knows basketball. I'm working on this, like, documentary about the McDonald's All-American game, and I'd love you to be part of it. And, like, mind you, I'm, like, on my way to set, and I'm just, like, confused. It's, like, 8 a.m. my time. I'm like, what? Yeah, I'm down. Like, what do you need me to do? And, like, he was just trying to explain it, like, in terms of, like, because I told him, like, I want to have a real conversation, but, like, I was on my way to, like, do this other thing. And he was like, yo, like, you know, like I talked to Chike and Cootie. And like, once he said that, I was like, oh, all right. Yeah, we're definitely down. Like we're in, that's family. So I'm like, cool. Like I'm down to do it. And then the next day, I feel like we had wrapped that project at like 2 a.m. Chike called me and Chike is my man. We'll text, but he never calls me and he definitely doesn't call me at 2 a.m. So I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to take the call. And Chike called me and he was like, yo, I got this basketball project for you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I spoke to Corey yesterday. I'm in. Like, let's do it. And he was like, you spoke to Corey? And I'm like, yeah, the McDonald's All-American game. And he was like, oh, no. he was like, no. Yes, but that's down the line. I need you on this other thing. Then he starts explaining Point Gods. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, so, like, now my head's completely fucked up. Can I curse? I didn't mean to curse. My bad.
No, you're good. We're going to earn that explicit because if you want, I'll say fuck, shit. Yeah, we're good.
Thank you, bro. Thank you. But yeah, so now I'm like, what is happening right now? And then he puts me on an email with Billy. Billy gives me the gut check and he like tries to test me out to see if I really know ball. Like he starts throwing questions at me. And then like at the end of it, he's like, nah, he's the guy. And then he linked me on a call with Sam. And like, I think you remember this part, like, Billy, this is the part where it was like, I was like, hey guys, I'm in Mexico. I never take vacation. I know we're at like, they were at like go time. They were like, yo, we need you like right now. And I was like, guys, I want to, but I'm like, I need these 3 days. I'll be back home by Friday and you will have me like 24/7 after that. But I need to like, I need to finish out my vacation. I only get these 3 days. And after that, like it was go time when we did point guards. And then time went on and yeah, I got brought in to help on meal ticket. But yeah, I don't know if Billy, you would have heard that.
So I didn't I know that. I mean, I remember obviously talking to you while you were in Mexico City. But what happened was Corey and Carlton, I can't remember exactly how much later, but eventually they were like, hey, we got this guy, Terrence, that we want to bring on to, you know, to help with meal ticket. And I was like, Terrence, like, I just finished a project with Terrence. That's my man. Like, yes, 100%. Like, let's go. So I didn't realize that I had reached out to you and in advance of us connecting on Point Gods, but I definitely, you know, circled up with them or huddled up with them about it, you know, maybe a month or 2 months later. And, you know, they were like, yeah, we want to bring Terrence on, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, I can vouch for the character of Terrence, and this is one of those segues that I'm hoping to be like Terrence. As I was watching the doc, one of the things that was most striking to me was the fact that the quote-unquote character component of being selected as an All-American from McDonald's. Can you guys touch a little bit about how that kind of weaves itself into the tapestry of the game and why it's so important? And if you guys also want to kind of allude to the fact that there was that NCAA ruling that, you know, hey, you can't play as in an all-star game as a high school senior. And this game kind of changed that narrative in a sense.
Yeah, I don't. So they have, you know, they have a selection committee and they have, you know, their sort of own criteria. And I can't speak to it in a way that, you know, I think will be 100% accurate in terms of like, you know, the boxes that they're looking to check, right? But what I do know is that certainly, you know, as I said in the film, my character is important. And what I can tell you is that having, you know, shot at the 2022 McDonald's game and the 23 McDonald's game, I can tell you like all of the kids that I interface with there are just like high character kids. Like they're just really, really special kids. You know, it's without a doubt, you know, beyond just talent and the ability to play basketball. Like, you know, these are really, really, really special kids. And whatever sort of, you know, algorithm they have that they're working on, like, is effective as far as I'm concerned. And I would even add to that, because when we came into the film, like, we're trying to poke holes in it. Like, we want to also find where's the conflict. Like, where's, you know, like, is this game, you know, you know, is there anything that we don't know about it, right? And part of that was like, well, who's gotten overlooked over the years? Who did they not pick? And we had a list running of like, you know, players that like they should have been a McDonald's All-American. And you know, if you're looking for, you know, any type of conflict or conspiracy, right, or whatever it is, we would interview people and one by one, folks would get like crossed off our list because you'd find out like, well, this person couldn't because they were just a fifth year senior and they reclassified, right? Or this person couldn't. And there were like all these like legitimate reasons as to why these other people were not selected to be McDonald's All-Americans. Now, I'm not going to say that's everybody, but a large number of folks that were on our list that we were curious about, the answers that we got or the reasons we found out, you know, were pretty solid.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off that, I mean, I obviously, you know, Billy's right. Like, we had like a long list going, and I think the one that stood out the most to us was like, oh, how did John Wall not make it? Like, you know what I mean? And then like, to Billy's point, it was always a very simple answer. It never, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, all right. Like, so like going into it, that was one of the things we wanted to like, yo, like, we're gonna sink our teeth and then we're gonna figure this out. And it was just like, no, this is what happened. I think the only one that like, it's not so much a character flaw. I mean, it is what it is. And this person that I'm about to say is a legend already, so it doesn't matter, right? But and he obviously had a lot going on as like Iverson. You know what I'm saying? But we all know why he didn't play, right? Like, it's the closest that I could say, like, oh, it was a character thing. But I mean, there was obviously, like I said, like other things. Like, whoever watches this, just go watch his doc and it'll explain. Yeah. But even when you think about it, what comes out of that, right? Like, he felt like, you know, he should have been named one at least. And he created the Allen Iverson Classic, right? Like, so I was like, all right, cool. Like, and that's just to say, like even from something that maybe someone felt like a way about, you know what I mean? Like, the beauty of this game sparking other games that, like, you know what I mean? Like, it is the grandfather to me, like, of them all, you know what I'm saying? And, like, I think that's a big part of this too. Like, you know, like, not to segue too much out of this, but, like, when you think about it, outside of the Super Bowl, I feel like the McDonald's All-American game might be right below, like if there was a tier, it might be like one, maybe two below in terms of like American sports institutions.
I was going to say the cultural index value of this, and it's something else. Yeah, we'll talk about this later on in the episode, but it is very much an American institution the same way that McDonald's the restaurant is. And you can see that permeating through the screen. And it's one of those things that if it was, let's say, another sponsor, you may not feel the same giddiness, but these kids are in that target demographic of McDonald's consumers. They've probably all grown up with it, whether they like to admit it or not. And it's a big part of who they are as Americans. And it's not to get too jingoistic about it. It is very much as American as apple pie or freedom, whatever you want to call that out as. So,
yeah.
No, and one other thing, and I'm going to kill this metaphor, but the secret sauce of it all is there's a stat that when you're watching the movie that just blew my mind, which was 60% of all McDonald's All-Americans had a significant career in the NBA and the WNBA. So to your point, whatever the algorithm is, it's working, because not only are they able to parlay that success to step one, but it's also step two, step three, step four.
Yeah, without a doubt. No, they rarely miss. And what, to me, was so amazing was, look, like, there's obviously a lot of opportunity to view great players today, right? Like, you can be on Instagram or on YouTube and see a kid who's playing in, you know, some rural suburb, some rural town somewhere and killing, and you're like, all of a sudden that kid's on your radar. But go back to like 1977, 79, go back to 81, right, 85, like, there weren't those outlets. So there, to identify these players, right, in the same way. So you had Street and Smith, which obviously, like, you know, was a great way to see, like, okay, who out there is, you know, who's good, who's doing what. But at the same time, like, for the McDonald's selection committee to have gotten it right so many years before the advancements of technology that we have now, it's really just miraculous. Because, again, like, the proof is in the pudding. Like, you saw who's in the league. They were in the league. They're playing in the 80s. They're playing in the, right, in the early 90s or the late 70s. And chances are, if they were killing, they were a McDonald's All-American.
There's a reason why there was hallowed tones and hushed tones about that 79 All-American squad. And that's why they got that little segment in the doc as well. Like, it is something. And one other thing that I really agree with what you said, Billy, is we're living in an era of uber connection, meaning, to your point, we can see any basketball player, whoever decides to chuck a shot at the rim, because we all have a camera phone. But one of the things that was really appealing to me watching the doc was in that sweet spot of the early to mid 90s, it was all these rumors of players kind of coming together. And this was the first time you could not only see them in person, but then also see them combat against one another, because you truly get that hierarchy of who is king and queen of the mountain.
That's right. And that's why the NBA scouts, right, pre one and done, were there, right, to watch, to see it was, because it was like, okay, here's the first chance we're getting to see. So, okay, so we know this, you know, this player is good, right? And we've seen them win 3 state championships. But, like, who have we really seen them play in at those state, you know, at that state championship level, right? But now it's like, okay, well, we're going to bring the best from all across the country, and now we're going to put them head to head, and then see who's the cream of the crop.
Yep. Perfect. Terrence, anything to add on that particular topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is kind of a testament to the committee, right? And, like, I know that there are, I feel like this is just like a societal conversation anyway. Like, it's funny how the game is kind of like a microcosm of like a lot of things, right? But
yeah,
what's interesting is like we always talk about gatekeeping from an, and usually when you hear that term, you think about it in a negative way. But sometimes it's just like the people who are like, you know, the sages of like that, of that community, whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, all of us kind of come from an era where like streetwear, sneaker culture, basketball, there were people who you knew you could trust their opinion on things. And like, to Billy's point, right? Like, from the late 70s through to like, you know, almost when you think about it, to like the mid 90s, we didn't really have the technology like we would have today where you could just search, or, you know, you definitely not today where you could just go on, you know, Instagram and your algorithm knows you want to see that, right? Like, you just had to have like, you know, the Tom Kachowskis, the Boo Williamses, right, you know, of the world, you know, the Howard Garfinkels of the world.
Yeah.
The people who everybody knew, like, yo, like, you know, their opinion, they know what they're looking at. And when you put them in a room together and you're like, oh, I've seen this player, I've seen that player, I've seen that person, they were able to come together and like really like, you know, put together an elite showcase.
Yeah.
For at least two decades.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to that. You know, I believe that, again, they still get it right. So there is that still that mix of committee and technology. But yeah, like I hat tip to them for being able to really like, you know, gatekeep in a positive sense. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is the crew. This is who
we are. I was going to say, the Golden Arches should open up like that to let all hoopers in. One other thing I was going to say to you guys is the fact that, you know, as you kind of watch these documentaries, and I made the analogy of like being a parent, you're not supposed to have a favorite child or a favorite subject, but there are certain, dare I say, characters that just came off the screen. And I was going to ask each of you, did you have a favorite person that as you were making the movie, you kind of just fell in love with the person and you're like, you know what, whatever happens, I want to just be there and I want to have season tickets for this person. And for me, I kind of joked that like, why is everyone's favorite Flauge Johnson? But was there anybody else? Because even Derek Lively and the whole segment about his mom and just being this tenacious dude on and off the court, having to deal with so much tragedy, but having the poise of, dare I say, a presidential candidate. Like, yeah. Who are those guys or girls?
Yeah, it's another great question. I mean, there's so many. You know, just from the alumni, you know, that we got to interview to the contemporary players. I don't know, Terrence, were you sort of part of the conversations about early on about who we were going to think about shooting in at 22? So,
nah, okay. I think you guys had already shot that.
So what happened was, Corey and Carlton had put together a list. I don't know if you, you know, helped sort of inform that list or not, but when we were gearing up to go shoot the 2022 game, it was like, okay, well, you're there for a couple of days. You can't focus on every player, right? Like, you just won't have enough time to develop a story around the character. So we had this list and we narrowed it down to like maybe six different, you know, 2023 players, maybe, you know, or maybe it was eight, maybe it was like four men and four of the women. And ultimately we, you know, we had to get it down to even less. We had to get it down to four. We felt we needed to focus on two women and two men for that class because we were going to trail them, you know, the entire length of the event. And Flauge's name was on the list, but at the time, like, Flauge wasn't a household name. You know, Derek Lively was the number one ranked player in the nation, but we didn't necessarily know about him, you know, and his personality, how it would transcend, right? We knew about the story about his mom. And we knew that, you know, he was going to, you know, he was a great kid. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, the way that you see him in the film is how a lot of people spoke about him. You know, Mari Bailey was from Chicago, where Corey and Carlton are from Chicago, and the game was in Chicago. And he was like the ESPN, I think, number two ranked kid in the nation. So for them, they felt, Corey and Carlton felt like, you know, there was synergy there. They wanted to, you know, have him in the story. Right. And then Janiah Barker was, you know, someone that we felt just from what we saw on, you know, YouTube and some interviews, she had a big personality and, you know, would be a great character. So we took a leap of faith on those four characters and we're like, okay, this is who we're going to shoot. Like, and it worked out. I mean, Flauge, the moment we got to Chicago, put a camera on, I was like, oh, she's a star. Like, this girl is an absolute star. you know, Derek was incredible. You know, Janiyah was great. You know, Amari was great. So, you know, by the graces of God, we just, you know, we're blessed to have chosen, you know, four amazing characters that could carry a film in this way. And then, you know, I just also want to just give a shout out too, to Samir Hernandez, who Samir was an executive producer on NYC Point Gods. He produced this film with me as well. And he did a fantastic job of just getting the alumni to sit down. And we had, you know, some amazing interviews, you know, with, you know, a number of folks, you know, from Patrick Ewing to Chris Mullin to Dominique Wilkins. I mean, these are like, you know, these are, you know, folks that, you know, I idolized as a kid. To get to sit there with Dominique Wilkins and interview him about, you know, his McDonald's game experience was just absolutely incredible. So it'd be hard for me to put a finger on who was my favorite. I mean, Amari Stoudemire was great. I got to tell you, Amari Stoudemire was a lot of fun to interview. He was amazing. So many. J.J. Redick brought it. Grant Hill was incredible. Jalen Rose was incredible. I mean, I couldn't even tell you who the best alumni was. I mean, you know, Scoop Jackson's a legend. I mean, I don't know. T, did you have a favorite?
Favorite probably, well, from... Okay, I'm gonna answer this in two parts. I'm gonna say the one, and obviously we love the film, so this isn't a negative, but it's just the one who I would have been like, yo, this kid would have been cool to talk about too, and that's probably Grady Dick, and that's only because of the amount of like personality he has. Like, yeah, like in the league he's doing pretty well, but like, you know, you remember draft day, he showed up in like the all red, like it was like, yo, this kid's a ham. He loves the attention. So he's the only one that would have been like, you know, but again, not a miss, and he got some shine. But I'm gonna go to I hope you're okay with this, Billy. I'm gonna go to a moment that didn't make the film, and Billy knows exactly what I'm about to say. But Billy had like this incredible interaction with Tracy McGrady, and it was like kind of like one of those, again, uncovering like, well, what went wrong? What, why weren't you in the game? Kind of moments. And it was like a full on like pin drop moment, like. T-Mac walked in and tried to like intimidate Billy, and Billy, listen, he's a 5'9 scrappy slap the floor guard from New Jersey. Yo, Billy ain't taking that shit. So Billy like looked up at him, you know what I mean, puffed up his chest and was like, you're not gonna punk me, like, you know what I'm saying? And we all just kind of watched, and T-Mac was like, all right, I could rock with this guy. And then Billy got him to open up and like remember who he was when he was like a 17-year-old kid trying to change his life. And you know, with all due respect, like, of course, we love T-Mac. This is not, he got emotional, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it brought him back to that moment. And, you know, it just, it's a testament to the film. It's a testament to, like, Billy, like, you know, showing him, like, yo, we mean business because I mean business. You know what I mean? But also, like, in that same minute, softening him up and getting him to actually, like, remember what it was for him to be an unknown kid, like we just talked about, from a part of Florida nobody knows about. And you were a throw-in to the ABCD camp, and you come out of that going from, you know, from that into the legend that, you know, the beginnings of the legend that we know. And Billy brought him back to that moment, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know, and it was an amazing part to watch. Like, you know, like they talk a lot about, you know, this term. I don't like the term, so I'm just gonna say, like, sometimes things make it the cutting room floor. And that's one of them. But yeah, I got to give Billy his props because we all were just like, yo, like it was intense, bro. Like, it was great.
Yeah, I was going to say, right now I'm watching a show called Shorzy. I think some people will know it, others might not. But there's very much a mantra on the show of setting the tone. And if nothing else, listener, what you get out of this episode is Billy Burke sets the motherfucking tone. So thank you for that, Billy.
No, listen, I don't want any smoke with T-Mac. Like,
No. In fact, I know Tracy personally. I don't, but he said game recognized game, and you look real familiar, Billy. So don't work about that.
No, he look. I think a lot of, you know, when you're interviewing players of such a high caliber, as you know, as T-Mac, like they've done a lot of interviews over the course of their career, right? And not everyone who's interviewed them probably has had the best intentions, right? So sometimes. Folks, you know, like T-Mac, I've experienced come into these interviews with a, you know, with their guard up, or just like, you know, questioning, you know, sort of what your motives are, right? Like, are you just looking for something salacious, right? You're looking for a soundbite to then spin on me. There is trust that has to be created, you know, throughout the course of the interview. So, yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe, what I can say is by the end of that interview, I think that there was, you know, trust that was formed where, you know, I think Tracy saw what I was looking to do and the types of questions I was asking and, you know, what I was looking to achieve. And he opened up. And I have to say, it was one of the best interviews I've ever done in my life. Like, it was amazing. And it was a very emotional story that he shared with us. And it is one of those things where you're like, how does this not make it into the film? But that's the process of filmmaking, right? Is like, you know, once the train starts, you got to keep it on the track. You can't, you know, you can't take the audience and, you know, divert, you know, to another location and then bring them back. And that was the situation we were in with his story. But yeah, Tracy McGrady was obviously an amazing athlete, but he also has an incredible story and an unbelievable journey.
For sure. Now, so we are about that sweet spot where I think we'll take one more question, and I would be remiss because one of the most culturally relevant moments I've had with McDonald's was the infamous scene in Pulp Fiction, where there's a whole monologue about, hey, what do you call a quarter pounder in France? It's a Royale, and it's a Royale with cheese. And this is all a ham-fisted way to say, we talked about the fact that the game is an all-American institution, but do you guys see that the game itself may go international, like every other facet of professional or amateur basketball in America today?
I mean, it's another great question. I think that, you know, I would say, you know, my first response would be like, well, why not? Yeah. And, but then at the same time, it's like the McDonald's All-American game, right? So like, it's sort of the institution, right, is built on this idea of like America's top players. You know, what is that? You know, we just saw what the NBA did with the, you know, the U.S.
All-Star game.
You know, All-Star game with the U.S., you know, versus the world. So maybe, I don't know, maybe there is an opportunity to do something like that. But yeah, I don't see any reason, you know, why the game can't, you know, grow beyond, you know, the borders of America.
I wouldn't hate it. You know what I mean? I think that other games kind of already have that. You know, you look at like the Nike Hoop Summit, you know, like it's literally predicated on the idea of like, hey, like, let's take the 12 from the McDonald's All-American game and then put them against some international talent. You know, and other like, you know, high school showcases kind of have, again, like a version of it. But if the McDonald's game went that way, I think it'd be interesting. And maybe they wouldn't change the All-American one, but maybe they make one that's specifically for Europe. You know, maybe they make one that's specifically for South America. You know what I mean? Maybe they make one that's, you know, for, you know, African nations. Like, I could see that, particularly because of, like, how much the game is growing. I think, you know, Ro, keep me honest here, but I want to say it's, like, the second most popular sport globally to you know, global football.
Starting to feel like that every year. Like every year we're getting a little bit closer to global football. And it's really interesting because I think part of the reason why those two sports appeal to so much of us is those are the only two sports I can think of where there's no facial impediment. So you're watching a game as much as you're watching theater.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I could see that. Like, I just, maybe it's the basketball purist in me and I'm like, no, don't take the McDonald's All-American game away from us. But, you know, we got, you know, the incredible talent, like I said, coming out of like France. South America has always had like incredible talent, you know, like to showcase. And again, like, the, you know, they just created its own league on the continent of Africa, like specifically because they're developing talent. So with that, it has to be like, you know, high school aged talent coming out of these places. So I could see like, you know, a version. You know, because McDonald's itself is global, I could see maybe they're, you know, taking the game, you know, around the world. But it always has to be the McDonald's All-American Showcase on its own, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I'll start the USA chant after the episode, but I wanted to thank both of you. We've got Billy Burke and Terrence Watson, who have a tremendous movie on Amazon Prime called Meal Ticket. Gentlemen, any last words before we bid people adieu?
Yeah, I would just, you know, love to just say, you know, a special thanks to everybody involved that helped make this film what it is. You know, there was an incredible, you know, team behind this. I don't want to start listing off names because you always leave somebody out, but you know, Chris Villona was one of the director of photography on this film, did an absolutely amazing job. Brad Roth was a producer on this film, did an amazing job, you know, helping get this across the finish line. You know, just so many names to mention, and always extra big shout out to, you know, Cootie and Chike. I mean, you know, both of these films, New York City Point Gods and Meal Ticket, I wouldn't have been a part of without, you know, them ushering me into it. So, you know, always just super grateful for, you know, our friendship and the opportunities that those guys continue to provide.
Yeah, I normally end with something like wax poetic like Billy just did. So since Billy did it, I'm going to say something fun. I'm going to say everybody go watch Meal Ticket this weekend, next weekend, every other weekend. Go get a number two, you know what I'm saying? And then after you listen to it, listen to Freebird. You know what I'm saying?
Not only that, get the hard Sprite. Also, if you're looking for a companion piece, we have the aforementioned New York City Point Gods documentary. And I'm sure these guys are going to have a documentary on Slam Magazine by 2029 to complete the trilogy. So without any further ado, we will say everybody good night. And thank you again for listening. You can follow us on all the socials at Sneaker History. And yeah, have fun, everybody.
Peace.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. If you want more insights into the sneaker world, I've started a newsletter called the Sneaker Newsletter to share my knowledge of over 2 decades experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link below or go to thesneakernewsletter.com. Last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.